Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Let's see how this works. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Everyone's here. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Pretty good. Can't complain.
All right. Sweet. Let's get into reviews.
All right. First game to talk about. We are not fucking around.
Well, hi.
So how's everyone doing?
Pretty good.
But don't stop on mic. Let's get to the reviews. Snap.
Hey. I just figure we record everything anyway, so I might as well just do the intro right away and keep everything.
It was awkward.
Just keep everything.
That's literally what you should always do.
I'm down with that.
Burn it and post if you don't like it. Otherwise...
Is my volume different this week?
You sound different, but not your volume. Is that just me, y'all?
There's some low bitrate warbliness.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was hearing as well.
I wonder...
I don't think it's on the stream itself, though.
I didn't get a new mic. I just got a new USB cable, and everything just seems different.
Yeah, you sound like a sexy computer.
Yo.
Stupid sexy computer.
I'm a computer. Help. Stop all the downloading, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I just listened to you in the stream and you sound fine.
All right.
Oh, interesting.
As long as I still sound okay, that's all I care about.
Well, I mean, not to us. You sound like a robot monster, but...
I mean, but, like...
That might just be Discord being weird, then. Let me leave Showtime and jump back in.
That does happen.
Here.
Am I any better? Back. Any better? Man, what is going on?
I am your host underwater.
All right, let me exit Discord completely and reboot it.
Please don't make us go back to Skype.
Damn, you had that.
Don't make us go back to Skype. The sadness in his voice as he pleads not to go back to Skype. Now, where the fuck is Discord on this computer? I just have it set to start automatically. CD, Discord, there we go. Checking for updates, starting. This is riveting entertainment.
That part means that it is for the chopping block.
Chopping block.
Yes.
Am I better?
You still sound aquatic.
What the hell's going on?
Good marbling.
Aquatic even.
I'm down with that. I can roll with this. If it sounds normal in Twitch, like, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone sounds normal to me.
Well, that's good.
What the hell is going on? Now I'm, like, worried if I should stop the show and try figuring this out or what.
Wizard did it.
Wizard did it.
Anyone have any suggestions? Or should I just roll with this?
I gotta get up early and roll. Let's go.
Play through it.
Yeah, we should be fine.
All right, if it sounds good on stream, we'll just go with this. So, how's everyone doing?
Well, let's just do it.
We'll do this again. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. We refused to talk about how we were feeling before the show because we didn't want to waste any of the gold.
I did that. I was like, I want to ask you guys how you doing, but I don't want to waste it. They were like, you know what? And then we sat there, and then I said, we'll just sit here in awkward silence. And we sat there in really awkward silence. It was all my fault. It lasted forever. And then Purnell and Joe came on at the same time, and that was cool.
And we were ready to go. Ba-boom.
What's going on with these pies?
What's going on with what?
The hell is this pie situation?
There's a pie situation.
How do I sound now? Talking about pies in the server, I guess.
Do I sound different now?
Better, but not all the way.
No.
But no, you. I mean, you're understandable. That's what matters. I mean, we can understand you.
Discord apparently switched my microphone, so I switched it back.
Yeah, okay, you sound better now, yep.
Yeah. And me earlier today as well.
God damn you, Discord.
Come on, Discord. We were just saying.
Discord.
Are you just tempting fate now?
Like, I can't tell what's wrong.
No, I think it sounds fine. I think you're good. I think we're good now. We can move past this.
No, we can't. Altogether. I'm stuck on this. I don't know what to do.
There's nothing to be stuck on. We're fine.
Because if it's bad tonight, it'll be bad for wrestling tomorrow. And that's something I actually care about.
Well, this gets recorded. Watching wrestling does not.
You're here to that.
Ill.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say it. I have a new favorite, cutest enemy for Elden Ring. Are y'all ready for this? You know Let's I like my it. Cute enemies. Let's I've been waiting it. To tell Tim this specifically because he's heard. He's seen a lot more of like the game than I have. And I just rolled up on these guys because I'm in the Altus Plateau. The skeleton snails.
Oh, that sounds cute. God.
That's a whole enemy type, actually.
They're so cute. I just lost my mind, and then I let one kill me. I let it punch me over and over because I just couldn't do it. Like, it's so sweet. It's like all the snails are like snakes / cats in this game. Mm-hmm. And finally, I guess this is like environmental spoiler, but there are skeleton snails, and they hiss at you like a cat / snake, and they're so mad at you, and they have a little magic attack, and it's a little skull that they like vomit at you, and it's the cutest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, I was and like, the
shell
crying.
Is a skull.
So cute. They've like repurposed a human skull as a shell.
That's adorable.
It's actually so cute. I'm gonna try to find like a video and post it in the Twitch chat. It's like I took a bunch of like videos myself, but I have not uploaded them online yet.
Just send a still image. I'll use it as the image this week.
Okay,
because I don't know what else to use as the image this week except like a broken computer.
But it looks like it's going to be a skeletal snail.
Oh, they're so cute. And I hate to ruin their existence for Purnell if he hasn't seen them yet. But Purnell, these sweeties are worth it. These are worth like a visit to this world. You got to see these guys. You can come chill with me. I can just take you to skeleton snails. And then we can just let them kill us so we can like die together by their cute little hand. It's going to be awesome.
Wait, so are we forming a new cult or something now? The cult of the skeletal snail?
Sounds like a nice little death cult.
Yeah.
Death snail.
It's better than the other ones going right now, so.
But they're precious.
Skeletal so are we
gonna
call death this snails.
The, are we going to call this the SNL podcast then? For snails?
Oh my god. Tim got a picture. Did you already post it to the Twitch chat? I'm going to copy
I
it
did.
If you did not.
Well, it's not in the Twitch chat. It's just,
okay, I'll that is so there. Cute.
I'm dying. Yeah, I see him in action too. When they hiss at you, it's like just tears running down my face, like anime tears, because it's just the cutest thing. Like, and I'm not being like eccentric and being like, oh, I think a gross thing is cute. Like, actually, it's inherently adorable. And I honestly believe they were designed to just like tug at your heartstrings.
You know, I genuinely don't know if I ran into those things.
Oh my god.
I feel I'm like I make, must have.
I'm going to make you and Purnell watch a video. Optional?
Well, I mean, there's most of Elden Ring is optional when you get right down to it, but
it's so true. I've only seen them in this one little graveyard type area on like a weird jutting rock of the Altus Plateau that kind of doesn't have anything else going on. I don't know if they're elsewhere, but I've seen like a ton of different kinds of these snails now, and this is the first time I saw this, so I was losing my mind. I couldn't wait. And that's all the news I have. This is the only cool thing that happened to me this week, except for the game I'm going to review, which was also fun, but can't rush that.
Are you diving into
it? I think maybe I just didn't fight them.
I didn't fight them either.
Capital outskirts.
Oh yeah, I'm in the capital now, finally, and like without saying anything else, like God, this game's so beautiful.
It's great.
I can't stand it.
Is the capital the same place you warped to by accident at one point with the giant stomping people or whatever?
Yep.
That could happen to me. Oh, nice! I got there. I want to say organically, which is kind of a pun into how I dropped in there too, but what a cool area.
Oh, I just took a warp there by accident, like maybe 5 hours into the game, and it was like, what the hell is this place?
That's awesome.
Giant shopping guy's like, fuck you.
There's an early teleporter trap that takes there. I almost just said something that actually is a spoiler, like out loud, because there's a funny anecdote about that spot you end up at that you don't realize until like towards the end of the game, but that's for you to find out.
Ooh. So,
next time on the SNL podcast.
I feel like it's been long enough that spoilers should be okay now.
Well,
no, fuck you, they ain't.
It's that the people present here, and it's like, you know,
Joe's like, yeah, I think it's long enough. Spoilers are present. Like, yeah, maybe if I were reviewing multiple games a week, I would be there right now. So, yeah, that's a
favorite spoiler for me. Pernell.
Huh?
It's yours.
Good.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that this is something that, yeah, I would, yeah, it's. I'll talk about it later. It's not
that I don't think that spoilers are fair game at this point, like, but I think when it's a live show, we can at least be like, hey, we're about to say some spoilers, so now you have the chance to, like, mute for a minute or walk away or something. Like, I feel like that's or all the heads up that we really need.
Like, yeah, there's certain, like, special things in the game that I wouldn't talk about, like,
yeah,
you know, and this is one of them. Like, I would talk about the last boss before this, because fucking whatever, you know.
Mm. Word,
it's
I
a
feel weird that.
Creature in a tree. Like, it's not, like, whatever. But this is, yeah, something cooler.
So this is something unique.
Unique. I went to Best Buy this week.
Did you? What'd you get?
I don't know.
I got memory cards, but that's not the interesting part. So I don't know if you know about this, because I don't know how many people are still collecting things for the PlayStation 1, but I've been getting really... Huh?
I was actually just playing PS1 today.
Oh, nice. Still Alundra or whatever?
Oh, no. Nah, this time it's for Rhythm and Pixel. I'm doing research for the topic, and I booted up Star Ocean 2.
Oh, I love it. Mm. I love that game. Yeah, it is. So they came out with this product, a company called 8-Bit Mods. And it's called the MemCard Pro, and it is just a PS1 memory card. It's got a little LCD, not LCD, LED screen on it and stuff, and like it uses a micro SD card to create virtual memory cards for the PlayStation 2. Oh, sorry, for the PlayStation.
Trauma.
Yeah.
And they sell this like currently at Best Buy?
No. They
no. He needs the SD off the internet. Cards.
Oh, okay.
The SD card though. I went.
Oh, okay. Now, okay.
Now, gotcha. Now, here's the thing. The smallest, cheapest memory card I could buy at Best Buy was a 32 gigabyte SanDisk for, like, you know, I think it was like $10 or something. And I was like, okay, this is good. I popped that thing in, and, you know, of course, like I said, you can make virtual memory cards all day. You can set them up and move data around with your computer and stuff. It's good tech. But then I did the calculations. And the thing about the PlayStation 1 memory cards is that they were 128 kilobytes when they were around. Mm-hmm. So my 32 gigabyte SD card, literally the cheapest, smallest thing I could buy in a you know, brick and mortar store. I did the calculations. I now have a device that is the equivalent of 262,144 PlayStation 1 memory cards.
Holy shit.
Nice.
Right. I love that you know that, and I love it for us that you know that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
awesome. So what are you going to play?
Yeah, that's another dumb thing. The game that I am currently playing is the very unloved PlayStation 1 RPG Beyond the Beyond.
My man.
Yeah.
Beyond the Beyond. Samson got cursed forever.
It feels like forever, doesn't it?
It really fucking does.
So why are you doing that to yourself?
Because I haven't beaten the game yet.
It is a good game.
It is actually good. I like it. It was made by Camelot. It's like a precursor to Golden Sun. It just doesn't have the Pokemon aspect to it, but it's like the same game.
The only issue that game had was the freaking combat system. There were too many freaking random encounters. That was the game's major flaw. And at the time, people were expecting more out of a PS1 RPG. It's like, oh, the first PlayStation, the first RPG for a PlayStation console. What will this be like?
Kinda was like it first, or was Suikoden first?
Right, Beyond the Beyond was the first one.
Yeah, Beyond the Beyond was the first.
That's cool. I didn't know it was the first. I knew it was way early.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
First one.
So that's why I went to Best Buy, was to buy a memory card for my PlayStation 1 in the year of our Lord 2022.
I enjoy the fact that if the way I used to mod a Wii to get, like, retro software on there, I don't think I could possibly do it for anyone anymore because I can't buy a small enough memory card.
Yeah, they're on the internet still. I did have to buy a micro SD card for some device, and it had to be a maximum of, I think, 2 gigabytes
something. That's where we're getting to this point in technology where things are just, it's weird that something only 10 years ago is near unusable because things are too good now.
Things are too good. Send them back.
I know.
Everybody's going to play Beyond the Beyond.
That is evil. Pernell, what did you do this week?
Took my nephew to a senior year of college. Told people that Beyond the Beyond is good. let's see. Swiped. Played a lot of games. Played a lot of board games. Actually got another review board game in, so I'm going to be playing that
Whoa. What board games did you play?
So, let me see. So, the games I played this weekend were Ponzi Scheme, Point Salad, and Res Arcana. There was like one other one. I'm not even remembering. Oh.
Res Arcana.
Furnace. You might have heard me talk about Res Arcana because it's It's like one of my favorite games. But nice. Furnace is one that if you haven't played it, it's surprisingly good. It's about, the theme isn't going to really settle you so much. It's a business tycoons in like the 1920s vying for, production money or income. And due to being how they are, all of them have like an individual ability that they can use that's like pretty much cheating. But that's part of what makes it fun. Awesome. It's a surprisingly pure engine builder. Love it to death. I need to stop buying engine builders though because I have too goddamn many.
Dude, have you ever played a Food Chain Magnate?
I want to so fucking badly. That's all my freaking what do you call them? Oh, my white whale list. The only reason I don't have it is because I worry that no one I know is going to want to play it because I hear it's like 3 hours long.
Oh my god, I'll play it with you. I own it. Like, my partner would play it with you if you ever want to jump on Tabletop Sim. I didn't want to try that game for a while because at least when I bought it in 2016, it was kind of expensive, but I feel like it lived up to the hype and I can't really like say how it compares to what you're talking about because I haven't played those, but like sounds like something I could just see you really liking. I want to play this with you for now.
I also did hear that the way the game is designed that you can like pretty much fuck up the entire game on your first turn.
Yeah, that's definitely happened to me before. But every week I come in here and I review a game, I'm like, oh, I've got lost in the tutorial, and if it's Isle of Jura, you guys are like, how? So I can't say that happening to me is a fair descriptor of the game. I think I've done that in all the games you could do that in.
But the game that got mailed to me to talk about, because I pretty much put them through for like, because I went to PAX last year. I was able to get some like reviews, like descriptives in for that stuff. And I was like, hey, going to this point, I got a game called The Spill, which is by Cloak and Dagger. So it's, I look at it as being kind of like a new take on like the idea of Pandemic or whatever, but it's a cooperative game where you're trying to like save marine life from an oil spill, which I kind of like the premise behind that. Reverse tower defense, they call it. Ooh. So I am curious to see how that plays out. But aside from those things, I'm pretty much trying to shift my diet around because food sucks.
Same.
So,
Pernell, I saw something today. We talked about this a little bit earlier this evening. Moonbreaker during the Gamescom event. This looks like something that you would absolutely love.
I'm hoping it comes through for the show, but I'm curious. Like, I'm hoping it's not free to play, but even if it is, I might still give it a try. It looked, I like because like there's a game I bought on the 3DS years ago that had a similar vibe to it called like, Crimson Shroud, and it's that pretty much confirmed I am a sucker for the whole miniatures moving around on a map in a video game bit.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. You said Crimson Shroud. Now I'm paying a lot of attention. What are you talking about?
Oh my god.
So, okay, let's move on to another topic. Let me stop. So there's a game that got announced called Moonbreaker that Joe mentioned to me, got announced at Gamescom, and the whole gimmick for it is that the characters on the game are tabletop miniatures that you control. They have abilities, but you can actually paint them in the game. Like, it's a whole lot going on there. It's
Tabletop Wars, basically.
Oh, it's the Subnautica studio, so they have some pedigree.
If those are exactly them.
Shit on Steam right now. Well, what the hell's making noise on my computer? Oh, fuck. Oh.
I absolutely want that game. The only question I'm hoping for is that, like I said, I hope it's not free to play. But if it is, it is. I just don't want it to be. Because that will imply new figures every month. You can either pay for them in cash or you can play an obscene amount of the game to slowly get them.
I mean, even if it's not free to play, I could see them doing plenty of DLC with new characters and new packs, and you know, that would work.
I'd rather it be that. Like, give me a base game I can buy for, like, you know, whatever they want to fucking charge for it, and just make it so, like, hey, if you want these new characters, you can buy them as DLC, like a fighting game. I'm fine with that.
It smells like a free-to-play game to me, but I don't know.
We shall see. It's apparently going to be hitting release on September 29th. So
it's hitting early access September 29th. Yeah.
I'm scared, guys. I'm very scared.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. To get the real Crimson Shroud feeling, I feel like it has to be more scripted and less, like, PvP.
Yeah, because Crimson Shroud, like, that was a game that came out of fucking nowhere for me. It's like, what the hell is this amazing piece? The answer is great. That's what it is.
Yeah, better buy that pretty quick, because that's going down with the eShop here pretty soon.
Oh, yes. Anybody listening to the show, if you don't have it, get that shit. That's one of the ones worth having off the eShop.
Nice.
That was a public service announcement from the SML. Mm-hmm.
Tim, how was your week?
It's the time of year where, you know, I work in a school system and things are barreling towards September. So my life is just turning into a living hell.
Oof,
bit by bit, day by day. Then I come home more and more exhausted and more dreading what is to come until you get to, I don't know, the second week of September, and then you just kind of fall into line.
Did you wake you up when September ends?
Big oof, man. The next 3 weeks are the worst. They are my least favorite work days of the year, because there is so much going on and it all has to get done by, you know, so much to do. Other than that, geez, I don't know. I had a more interesting weekend the weekend before. I don't remember what I did this weekend.
What'd you do the weekend before?
Well, it was my birthday weekend, so, like, I went to an amusement park with my family, and then I had a day where I did whatever the fuck I wanted, because I took the day off from work, and my kid was taken care of, and my wife was at work, so I was just like, yeah, I'm going to do whatever I want today. It doesn't matter. And that might involve, you know, watching a movie at home, and then, like, scheduling an appointment with my bank about something, and then, you know, going to get lunch and then going to see a movie and just kind of deciding the next thing as I go. And, you know, it's nice. I felt better about driving, because right now, you know, whenever I'm driving, I'm like, I'm trying to get somewhere to, like, get my kid, get picked up, got to get somewhere by some certain time. But when I was just, like, rolling around on my birthday, I'm like, man, I like driving again. Like, I'm not agitated places. About the need. Yeah. I'm not agitated about the need to be somewhere. Just kind of cruising. I feel like I did something cool that Saturday too, but I don't remember. Went to a toy store. That's right.
Toy store.
Yeah. Like a vintage toy store.
Is that where you got the Atari?
No, I got that in the Lego store. Which, yeah, I bought that before I went to see the movie and walked into the movie with that thing.
nice.
I went to see Nope, by the way, and it was a private screening it ended up being, which is absolutely rad.
Was it good?
Yeah, the movie was also quite good. But yeah, you know, it's like there aren't toy stores anymore. Toys R Us shut down, even though there is a Toys R Us 45 minutes away from me in Canada. I haven't ventured that way in about 2.5 years for some reason.
Going to
an actual toy store that was full of toys was pretty cool. And it was fun. It was a nice weekend. This past weekend, don't remember. Oh, I think the weekend before is also, yeah, I took my kid to a bike park and then he crashed, fucked up his knee. That was fun. He didn't have to go to the hospital. He just had a scrape and he's a big whiny baby, but that was fine. Yeah, this past weekend, I think I just kind of chilled and embraced for what was coming. Hung around the house. I did some, like, cleaning and organizing and stuff like that, but nothing exciting.
It
would be a great transition if I was first, but I'm not. So,
do you want to go first?
I don't know. Chris can go first. We have there's order.
I don't care.
There's balance.
we could throw the script out the window and just go in reverse order.
I would like to go fourth or before.
The funny thing is, if we do it in reverse order, you're still fourth.
Nice. Okay.
So just right in the middle.
Let's do it that way to teach Tim a lesson. He's not going to like it if we go in reverse order. I'll tell you that much.
I will just leave. You will catch me next week on the SML podcast.
Oh, man. Well, let's dive into reviews. Chris, you could go first. The first game to talk about tonight is Dynabomb 2, developed by Seven Raven Studios, published by Total Console, released August 17th on Xbox, 18th on Switch, 19th on PlayStation for $19.99. Jack and Ella are on a vacation on a beautiful tropical island. Unaware of Dr. Brutus, they sip fruit juice and talk about their past adventures. They are interrupted by Dr. Brutus's voice. A loud explosion destroys the kiosk where they were relaxed, and so they decide to make the bad guy pay for it. Thus begins their new adventure, and you will be the hero. Chris, what's going on in Dynabomb 2?
Me?
You!
I gotta be the hero? Okay. Well, so Dynabomb 2, this is a action platformer starring, these two kids who are identical. It's just, do you want to be the boy or the girl? It's easy as that. So the stages are divided, like, basically 8 worlds, 8 stages, and a boss stage in each one. I think there's some extra stages, too. So lots and lots of stages. The way that the thing shakes out is that it's basically kind of a... it's just get from point A to point B, you know, like move all the way to the left or right or up or something to the end of the stage to go into the magical mechanical door that you have to find a key for. The key is the only requirement to beating the stage. However, there are tons and tons of jewels. There's quite a lot of enemies, and there are also what they call they're star spheres. They're like these robotic spheres that have a star on them. They look like robot Dragon Balls, basically. And these are all the collectibles and things that are, and obstacles that are in your way. And you get bonuses, if you can collect all of, all of the jewels, all of the Dragon Balls, or defeat all of the enemies before a little timer on the right side of the screen goes all the way down. Beyond that, like I said, it's just clearing levels and clearing bosses. The big motivating factor in getting these items is that you have upgrades that you can purchase for your characters. Some of them are, I guess half of them are temporary and half of them are permanent. And the game doesn't do a good job of telling you which is which, because you can't really tell by the descriptions. It's like, start the level with missiles and bombs. And I'm like, okay. And turns out that's a permanent. And then there's start the level off with missiles. And okay, that's a temporary. I finally figured out that what it is the currency. So the jewels purchase temporary things while the Dragon Balls purchase permanent things. And it takes you a while to get the permanent things. I played this game for hours and I have one. I have one thing. Because the Dragon Balls are split up in like 4 pieces in each stage. So like if you collect all the 4 of the pieces, you get like 1. And then like you can get some more, again, depending on your performance and the level. But yeah, getting just 25 of the things to buy the upgrade that lets you have 3 missiles at the beginning of the stage, that took a lot of doing. And that's kind of where the game draws back for me, but I'll get to that. So the art style of it is, like I said, it's very
vibrant.
It's kind of Mega Man-ish, huh?
Vibrant.
It's vibrant, yes. Lots and lots of bright colors in this game. Not too many, though. I think it pops. It looks really, really colorful and rainbow-esque, but, still not bad. Yeah, it's good art. Characters are a little bit, they're chibis. They got huge giganto heads and, little tiny bodies, and they're kind of Mega Man-esque, I would say. The gameplay of it is that you have limited ammo in all respects. The default weapon, the default weapon is chucking a bomb at an enemy, so it has a little bit of an arc. It bounces off of walls, and it might not hit your enemy. And as you proceed through the levels, there are these fancy-ass treasure chests that you open up to get more bombs. So the treasure chests are almost never actually treasure. It's just the ammunition you need to actually survive the stage. But again, defeating enemies is just kind of optional. If you can get past them, you can get to the end of the stage and proceed. You know, defeating them, the only real reason you need to really go after them is to get that end of the stage bonus, because there's no other incentive. Your character has 3 hits and then they die. If they die, they have to restart the whole level and they lose all the things that they got in that level up to that point. The only way to keep a thing is to beat a level with it, and then it gets added to your total. So you can't just grind for like jewels and purchase power-ups. You actually have to replay whole levels if you want to like save up jewels to purchase an upgrade for another level. So the game kind of incentivizes you to do that thing where you're sitting on this dragon's hoard of treasure because you don't want to spend it until the game gets hard enough that you have to. Whereas if you go back, and then it also promotes, you know, going through stages multiple times because you know where the Dragon Ball is in that stage to save up the way too many Dragon Balls you need to get a permanent upgrade, because of course you want those. That to me makes the game a little more repetitive than it needs to be. You've already got 8 very similar levels per, you know, world, because all of the 8 levels that occur in the world have the same backdrop, the same enemies, and the same like kind of stuff going on. However, when you get later into the game, like they do introduce like different traps and different like more athletic puzzles, like, you know, jetpacking between lasers. Because, by the way, your character does have a jetpack. It's another interesting mechanic. It works just like any video game jetpack. You hold down the jump button to start flying around. Your little jetpack meter goes down. But the interesting thing is that the way it refills is not like passively. You have to walk. So as long as your character is ambulatory, then the jetpack starts refilling. That makes no kind of sense outside of video games, but inside of video games, yeah, that's fine. That's a thing. The interesting thing is that your character does not need to be moving to anywhere. They just need to be moving their legs. So a common practice in this game, I noticed, is to jetpack until you can't jetpack no more, and then just walk up against a wall and just sit there and, you know, walk your head against the wall until your jetpack fills back up. And I'm like, this sure is a choice. So, and yeah, like I said, the gameplay loop is such that you're just basically incentivized to replay levels constantly. But, you know, if you do hit like a proverbial brick wall and not the kind that fills up your jetpack, then, you know, it does kind of put you in a weird position where, you know, you might have to purchase some like temporary, you know, power-ups only to lose them if you die. And so that really kind of puts a pressure on it that, you know, I feel maybe doesn't need to be there. But at the same time, like, they have to pad these things out, right?
Yeah.
So, final thing, and this is what I really like, this is a huge point in this game's favor, is that it has local cooperative multiplayer. So you can have 2 players blasting through this game. One controls the boy, one controls the girl. And they do have costume changes that are locked. I don't know how to unlock them. The game does not tell you. It just... it, you know, locks them away, and they're like, well, this is this, and if you try to select it, then nope. And you just get to figure that out at some point. So there you go.
Cool. Well, the game is sitting at $20. What are your thoughts?
I want to say that $20 is fine in terms of, like, the amount of content that you get in this game, and, again, the fact that you are going to be replaying a lot of this game in order to progress is, you know... that does make it seem like, you know, $20 would be worth it. It's a little odd considering the first game, which I have not played, is $6. So, you know, I kind of feel like these are eventually just going to get packaged together, probably for the same $20.
Now, do you want to know what doesn't make sense either? The game is $15 on Xbox and probably PlayStation. So it's got a $5 Switch tax on it.
Got that Switch tax. Yeah. Well, I mean, the only thing I can think of is that the Switch has, you know, like... this might be like one of those kind of things that you might play kind of spontaneously, be like, hey, look what I got. You could play it too. And then you both get, you know, detach the controllers and play through it.
Now it's $20 on PlayStation, so it might be a pricing error on Xbox.
Oh.
That it's $14.99.
Maybe they just got that Xbox bias. Maybe. I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody that has one of those, but, you know.
Yeah, I can't.
who in the world would like the Xbox?
I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, so $20, I'm going to say, God, if this was like a Wii game, it would be such a perfect game for $20. But I think on the Switch, given what $20 could get you on that system, it is a solid try it. I enjoy playing this game. I actually like playing the gameplay loop, and I personally like replaying levels to get goodies. And the game does establish you don't have to do that, so I might... you know, if I complained about that too much, then I'm just complaining about my own choices, which, you know, if I did that at this point, then I'm lost. So I'm going to give it a solid try it, only because the game doesn't really grab you right away into, like, something that makes you feel like this isn't just another platformer with collectibles, you know? But it is good, it's solid, and it's very impressive for having been made by Seven Ravens. I mean, pretty good.
Nice. So yeah, if you got an Xbox, grab it while it's still $15, because that's probably a pricing error. Next game to talk about is Curse to Golf, developed by Chuhai Labs, published by Thunderful Publishing, released August 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Curse to Golf is a golf-like adventure where every shot counts. Players are tasked with making it out of golf purgatory to become a golfing legend. With insane hazards, otherworldly power-ups, and tons of replayability, will you make it back alive, or will you forever be Curse to Golf? Tim, Ellis.
You know, all the shots count in regular golf as well. That's not like a special feature of this game. Yeah, it's a golf, and it's a roguelike all together. You are a professional golfer who is about to win a big tournament, and for some reason, they do not sound the sirens when there is a thunderstorm coming in, and your dude gets struck by lightning and dies. Right there when he's lining up for his last shot, and finds himself in golf heck. It might be purgatory, it might be hell, but it's, you know, some kind of golf themed underworld. Not important, but yeah, apparently you can, in the rules of this world, you can golf your way out through 18 treacherous holes, to ascend out of this horrible place where you do nothing but golf. So, yeah, it's an entirely 2D game. Most 3D game, or most golf games have some dimension of 3D to them, with, you know, you the camera setting up behind your golfer and you hitting it forwards, or, you know, it's like a fully 3D polygonal deal. No, this is straight two-dimensional golf from the side. And they do a surprisingly good job of giving you a engaging golf set of abilities, rules, things to tinker with without going overboard. You only have three clubs in this game. You have a driver, you have a iron, you have a wedge. You don't have like all the nimbly bimbly irons in between, so you're not like going through 18 different fucking clubs before you set up any shot. It's just you get three. That's all you need. You know, your driver is for your big, high arcing shots. Your iron is more straightforward long shots, and your wedge is for more precision, high arcing shots. And you can also, you know, you pick your club, you set your power, you then pick an angle. It has like a little dotted line on the screen, so you get an idea of the arc of where it is going to go. You can only pull the screen back so far, so if you're making a long shot, you can't, there is some amount of guesswork involved in kind of using they have a bird's eye camera, lol, because birdie camera, that's what it's called, because it's a golf pun, where you can pull out and like view the whole course to kind of line up your shots better, but still there's a little bit of you know, trying to skill it up and line up those shots to make sure you're not firing them off into a hazard. And then you can put a good amount of spin on the ball. And it's cool that, like, you don't have to set your spin before you hit the ball, which is how real golf and most golf games work. Because, you know, once the ball is in the air, you cannot touch it. It has gone far away from you. But in the world of golf heck, you have the ability to dictate the spin and the amount of that spin as the ball is in the air, which is good because, like I said, when you're hitting it off screen or it takes a bad bounce, this is going to save your sanity in being able to do some precision movement with the ball. And you can do quite a bit, like depending on how much momentum is still behind the ball when it lands, and just moving it left and right and over platforms and such. And it's cool and it feels good. And it makes you feel like you are having to think and make precision shots, even though, you know, the actual golfing is very much sanded down to, again, just three clubs and just a couple button presses. The levels are just fucking nightmares. You know, that's the whole idea. They're not all horrible, but, you know, these are things, they don't just sprawl out straight left to right. Like, sometimes the hole could be very far away from you and, like, very far down away from you, or it could be very far above you and you are, like, platforming your ball, like, up onto ledges or down off of ledges while still having to avoid water traps, sand traps, the usual golf hazards, and then unusual golf hazards, like graveyards where your ball is just lost, spikes, there's teleporters and fans and like Mario-esque pipes that you hit your ball into and they zip through and pop out somewhere else. And it's not always clear because there can be multiple teleporters on a course and it doesn't tell you which one connects to which. You kind of have to guess a little bit sometimes, which is fine, but it's consistent through runs. So when you're playing a level, when you're playing a hole, you are, you know, in most, in the normal game of golf, your score just counts up and your goal is to get out to finish a hole in the fewest amount of shots. In this, you have a number that is counting down and you have to finish the hole before you run out of shots or you die and you have to go back to the beginning. You have to clear 18 holes to finish the game. So at whatever point you fail a hole, you go back to the beginning. This is the roguish like element, and then it takes the course and shakes it up, and the holes are pre-designed, like they're not randomly generated, which I think is good because it means they're better designed and there's enough of them, and the way they shuffle around, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it says there's over 70 holes in total across four different biomes.
Yeah, like I've definitely seen the same hole twice, but
so you can learn the game, but learning all 18 is going to be tough.
It's not a problem. But as you play through a level, there's ways to help mitigate this. There's these little statues that are scattered around where if you hit them with your ball, it will raise your number up. So you have more shots to get to the end of the level. So when you get into a level, there's like right off the bat, especially if it's a new hole, you're going to pull back that birdie eye view and you're going to look around. You're going to try to plan your route. You're going to figure out like where the traps are, where you might want to try to take a shortcut. There's multiple routes and lots of tricks you can do in just about every level. Very few of them, except for like some of the earliest holes are very, you know, they're complicated. Some of the earliest holes are straightforward, but most of them have a lot of different stuff you can do and think about. And aside from kind of planning your route to hit these statues, you also get, and this is kind of where the random element of roguelike comes in, they give you these cards that you can play that give, you know, bonus effects. And you know, like the simplest one lets you take a practice shot. Like, okay, this shot looks weird. Or you just want to try something ballsy and see if it'll work. You can take a practice shot. And of course, there's also an improved version of the practice shot, where if the practice shot works out the way you want it, you can just take that shot. There's cards that let you take back a shot. There's cards that also will just add up to your score. There are cards that will turn your ball into a rocket for more precise steering, or a more powerful rocket, which means it will go farther, and you might be able to steer a little bit less. There is one that lets you change the direction of the ball in midair, one that lets it like drill through the ground, one that lets you create some portals, short range portals. There is one that stops time, and the description of it, well, it says that it stops time in midair, but the description of it is simply Dio. waiting for Brooke to like unmute and laugh at that because I know she'll appreciate it.
To say I had to unmute and laugh, called out. By the way, I laughed like 5 times during Chris's review, but I was very dutifully posting a YouTube video. So through the Twitch chat, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's like the first time I saw that card, I whipped out my notebook and I wrote that down on a blank page because I could not forget to mention that during this review. Because you would appreciate it so much.
I like that for both of us in the last week, we've like furiously whip out our notebook and be like, tell Tim or Brooke about this online this Tuesday. So good. I'm honored.
Yeah. But yeah, lots of like normal golf things and then lots of very not normal golf things. And these cards like really start to break open the levels for you. Like once you start figuring out like, oh, hey, I can actually, there's like a lot of levels have dynamite in them. I forgot. That's like a very common feature in this game. And there's cards that will blow up the dynamite. And otherwise you just like slam your ball into them and they'll break away. But it's like, oh, if I break the dynamite here and I shoot the ball over top of this tiny little hole, but I use the time stop card to stop the ball so it falls straight down, then I can take a shortcut there. Or like, ooh, if I could get up on this ledge here, I can then go over, you know, through this other little passage to get to the other side and save a bunch of time. So I'm going to hit the ball up, and then at the highest point in my arc, I'm going to use the U-turn card to change the direction so it goes up a little bit higher, and then I can take a shortcut that way. And you can just start pulling off some really cool bullshit with that, which in turn makes playing those earlier levels, you know, that you might see over and over again, like even more exciting, because now it's like, okay, I have tools at my disposal, and importantly, you understand how to use them, so you can start getting through these levels in a more creative and quicker fashion. That just feels really good, because that's like the point. One of the core tenets of golf is you're going out on a course, and it's the same course every time, but the conditions might change slightly. They change the hole placement. It's windy. It's wet. You're just hitting the ball a certain way that day. You never quite end up in the same spot. And the same thing with this game, you never quite end up in the same spot. And it manages, you know, despite all the ways in which this game is not a normal fucking game of golf, it manages to provide a very strong golf-like experience where you're making those same types of decisions and thinking about your shots and lining things up and figuring out what club to use, what cards to play and which way to go. That makes it engaging over and over again. There's different as you go through, like you start out in like a pretty normal, like grassy looking tile set. And then like every 4 or 5 holes, you will kind of move up to a different tile set, which will have different hazards. Every area has a boss fight battle. It's not really a fight. Golf boss challenge. Where there's kind of like a, you know, a guide character for that area, and you have to finish it's basically a race to finish the hole before they do. And each boss will have like its own mechanics you have to deal with, or kind of their own characteristics. And it's interesting because they don't just do the same thing every time. Like they are prone to making mistakes and knocking balls into the water, just like you are. So it was fun. Like I was getting crushed by the first boss, like the first few times I got there. And the time when I completed it, I had enough like knowledge of my cards and stuff in hand that like, it was not close at all. It was like, okay, I can go up here. I can take the shortcut, go down here, navigate this. And I was like so far ahead. It was a breeze. And the cool thing is when you finish a boss level, you don't have to do it again. It incentivize you to kind of go all in on those, because then you can put it behind you completely, and then instead of having a boss hole, you just play like a regular hole from that you know, biome set or whatever. The game looks great. It's got this fantastic you know, modern pixel art style that reminds you of stuff like River City Ransom Underground and Shovel Knight. That's just like, it's animated really great. The characters look fantastic, animates really well, the music is great. Yeah, if you haven't heard me say much bad about this game, it's because I have nothing bad to say about it. It's awesome.
Nice.
I will probably, if it gets like a physical release on Switch, I will buy it there. Like the review key was on Steam. I don't have a Steam Deck, so I was locked to my computer on the review. This is something that if I had had it on a portable, I probably would have played three times as much during the review period. It is a great game for that. It's super fun. It is well worth a purchase, undeniably.
Nice. So your official verdict at $20 is?
Yeah, buy it. Cool. All day. It's really cool. I really like it.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for you, Tim, because we are not going in reverse order.
Oh, look, snake.
That's for you, Tim.
Skull snail.
I put it in. I couldn't find a video of it, but I didn't look very long. I already put it in the Twitch chat, but this is my
So you just made your own?
It's a good video. Oh,
yeah. Thank you. I already had it saved. I just had to, like, upload it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now that I see it moving around, now I'm like, oh, yeah, I definitely saw those things. I think it's I may not have just seen them from the side to really get the full effect of the skull.
I spent a really long time, like, not just in this video, just letting them do whatever to me so I could look at them, so.
That looks awesome. That's so cool. Cute. I love Elden Ring. God, I gotta get back into that game.
I thought that that skull was gonna be, like, the size of, like, a regular human skull, so that it was gonna be, like, really small or something, but it turns out it's, like, the size of my skull, so it's, like, giant creature. Still cute, though.
Yeah, maybe it came out of a troll or something.
Yeah, I wonder. I was trying to think of like what a troll's head looks like and whether I buy that they could have this skull. I got to put some more thought into that.
I don't think so. I feel like they're... Whatever. This is not what we need to be talking about. I need to go to bed. You guys got more reviews. I'll catch you guys next week. We'll talk about troll skulls. I'll try to figure out what skull that snail's skull come from.
Okay. Right. A little homework for you.
Yeah.
Next time on the SNL podcast.
Good night.
Y'all are crazy. Next game is Robo Revenge Squad, developed by Rikodu, published by Rikodu and Mill Games, released August 17th on Xbox One for $19.99. Robo Revenge Squad is a co-op action game for 1 to 4 players where everything is a weapon. Fight alien robots using robos made of everyday objects, fridges, disco balls, baseball bats, and more. Your mission, kick metal butts. Purnell, how many butts did you kick? Didn't hear that at all. You're really quiet.
How about now?
Much better.
Okay, I can't do that the whole time because that was me yelling. Anyway, so I didn't kick much, but I kicked some, a moderate amount of tush. So the premise of this game is, you already worded, you already said it. You play control a robot who's destroying alien robots for some reason. These robots seem to care about this planet. Don't know why, but it makes for a fun game, so let's check it out. At the onset of the game, you kind of start with a few objects that you have at your disposal, and they're equipped to you in specific slots. You have a head slot, a right-hand slot, a left-hand slot, your physical armor, and your treads. And these things manipulate, you know, have specific functions. Your head can be an attack, or sometimes like a distraction device, or just an extra asset. The left and right hands are weapons. Typically the left ends up being something akin to like a gun or something, but not always. Sometimes it's also a melee attack. Your right hand is pretty much always a melee attack, and the treads are pretty much in regards to your dashing ability, how you dash. And the armor, or the centerpiece, your build, is just your armor, how much health and skill, how many skill points you have access to. What is the point of skill points? Well, your left hand is while your right hand can just be done. Can you make sure something? Okay, I just did something with the thing. It's fine. So your right hand just does normal attacks, and you don't have to be concerned about energy when you want to use those. The left hand, however, for every swing of that weapon, it takes from your SP meter, and you can only refill that meter by doing more damage with the right hand. So if you're the sort of player who prefers, you know, ranged combat, well, you got to get up and close and personal every once in a while, otherwise you'll run out of ammo and you can't fire your gun anymore. So the flow of the game is pretty much you taking on a particular mission, going into a stage, fulfilling that mission by destroying tons of robots, and getting the hell out of Dodge. And there's a few little elements to this game as far as like the actual stages go that are worth mentioning. One, interestingly enough, every level the game provides to you has a unique premise behind it. So one level might have you falling behind a cart and constantly mashing A at certain points to crank it up so it can move down a track. Other times you might be in a level where you have to sneak into floors and set plastic explosives to blow a facility up. Others you might be fishing. No, I'm not making that up. And across the board, you'll be doing these things while being assaulted by robots. This game does have the dreaded three-star system, but it's different from what you're used to in these games. It usually involves picking up all the MacGuffins or whatever. But in this game, it's based on the revenge system. Oh my God, I said the title of the name of the game in the statement. So the revenge system in this game involves you basically doing more damage than taking it. The more damage you do to enemies and destroy robots and what have you, this gauge at the bottom of the screen will fill up. There are three different markers on the line, on the bar, that results in you getting a star. You fill it far enough up, basically being close to the top, you get three stars in the state. So don't get your ass handed to you. Fight and stick and move, baby. Stick and move. That's the name of the game here. And then lastly, when you finish a level, once you fulfill the objective, unlike a lot of other games where a level will just end, this game does something a little different there, too. So enemies will keep coming after you, and you're dashing and smashing and what have you. But in order to actually leave the stage, you have to call for evacuation. And to do that, you have to actually do a timed button press 5 times in a row while running from enemies that are trying to kill you. That is... I feel like it's intentional, so I'm not counting it as a slight, but that it is frustrating as shit.
That's why you kill all the enemies and then try doing it real quick.
Oh, good luck with that. 5 button presses and my eyes are, they are, shoot, that line is tiny as shit. I always get it screwed up, at least the first time. But once you pull that off, then you have to survive for, what was it, 15 seconds while the evacuation jetpack lands to pick you up. And then once it lands, you have to pick it up and then mash A for it to take off before a bomb goes off. It adds lots of tension to it, I think. Even levels where I thought I had it under control, I still was like, come on, get this done. And then you get away, and you're good. I only played a single player, which was fine for the most part, but there were definitely a few levels where the objective would definitely be more doable with multiple people. Yeah,
this is definitely a game that shines with multiplayer.
The fishing objective was the one that gave me, I mean, they've all been pretty challenging alone, but the fishing one by far gave me the most difficulty playing it solo. The fishing mini game is basically hot, cold in the water. You have to drop a bunch of fishing lures in the water to suss out where in the water a specific object is. And you have to do it 3 times per section, and there's like 3 sections that make you do it. You get a total of 5 of these things, and if you run out, you got to go collect more and reload the fishing line to do it again. And as you're trying to concentrate and do this, robots will just spawn and try to kick your ass. You're like, come on, god damn it. You got to let it go, kill the robots, and get back on the line. I think that level by far took me the longest of all the levels I did. It took me like 25 minutes, whereas the average, until maybe like the last few of the Juicy Joe line, took me about maybe 10 minutes or so. After you beat Juicy Joe, who is the boss of the first quote-unquote campaign, you are able to do the second campaign, which involves another guy who looks like a freaking octopus somehow. And it's another set of 6-7 stages. I don't know if you unlock something by getting 3 stars on every one of the 2 sets of campaigns, but I was enjoying just unlocking random stuff. Unlocking stuff? Yeah, I said that. Because at the end of levels, you'll get experience points. You get enough experience points, you level up. Things you can earn are microchips and like, fuses, and also toolboxes that will allow you to get randomized items that you can use to customize the home base for your robot. So what you do with the fuses and the microchips is you can go to the planning board in the base, and you can unlock new equipment for your robot. The microchips unlock new objects on the base, and then the fuses actually upgrade the objects you unlock. So, for example, you might unlock a left-handed boxing glove, which is basically meant to be the companion to the right-handed boxing glove. But if you upgrade it 1 time, you can then do a power punch. You can like pretty much get a quick power punch out of it to do more damage to enemies by charging up the pull. The only thing that made me sad about this element, though, I'm always a fan for unlocking new stuff, but what made me sad was that while the trailer was like, everything's an object, there's so much to choose from. The skill tree made me feel like there needs to be more to unlock. though at the same time, you will be unlocking things throughout the entirety of the campaign. But I kind of settled on the freaking like the military style machine gun, and I ain't looking back. Yeah. But with that said, though, it doesn't diminish the fact that I was actually having fun playing the game. So, I mean, I'm assuming there's nothing stopping them from upgrading, you know, adding more content, maybe adding new weapons and stuff over across time, maybe even new campaigns.
Well, the game's sitting at $19.99. What are your thoughts on it?
I would say it gets a solid try in that regard. It was a game that I enjoyed quite a bit, but of course the solo versus multiplayer is a sticky wicket there. Not everybody's got the tenacity to sit there and fish solo and beat robots off with a stick while fishing with their fishing stick. But as it stands, I think it's a solid try. And if you feel as though what you heard sounds like, oh, I can tolerate that playing by myself, or I have people to play with me, well, get on that shit. You won't regret it.
Cool. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is The Bonfire: Forsaken Lands, developed by Zygma Games, published by Fredbear Games, released August 17th on Xbox One and Switch for $7.99. Build your settlement in a snowy encampment and manage workers and resources to survive monster attacks during the night. Slowly, you will gain access to advanced building and crafting options, discover and trade with new civilizations, and discover the secrets of the ancients. Brooke, tell us about your time with The Bonfire: Forsaken Lands.
Oh, man. So when you offered me this game, I took one look at a few of the gameplay screens and I said, ooh, I want this. This is clearly like a remake of a game I really loved, which is a text-based survival adventure resource management game that I really enjoyed that I played on an app on the phone more than a few times some years ago. I couldn't remember the name of that game, but once I looked it up after I had taken this game, I found out the game is called A Dark Room and is not made by the same folks who made this game. I was like, oh, I feel silly. This must not be the same game then. But opinion after playing the shit out of this game, this is still A Dark Room, but taken in a slightly different direction after about the first third of this game. Setup's almost identical. And I don't think the creators are trying to hide that. I think the styling and setup embraces it, lets the player know. The influences are clear and they're not trying to invent the wheel here or anything. But what they have done is taken a really great old wheel and like popped a spinner on it. So now we're riding spinners. We're having a great time. This is a really fun game for me. By the time this weekend rolled around, I didn't want to play this. I didn't want to try it because I was having a really great time playing Elden Ring. But then I made myself start it over some coffee in the morning on Sunday. And I had so much fun playing this. I played it all day Sunday and I only played a little Elden Ring at night before bed. And if you have been listening to the show lately, you know, like, damn, this is a fun little game for her. And I say little game, you know, this game is simple to start. It's really easy to get into. Anybody could play this game, start it out. You don't have to have any prerequisite knowledge of like survival games or worker placement or anything. But while it's simple to start and easy to get into, it's very deep and it takes you on a lot of unexpected places. I booted this puppy up. That's how old people say they start games, by the way. We say that we booted it up. Anyway, I booted the sucker up, and I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. I'm going to be done with this game in like an hour or two tops. This is an easy, simple little game. But here I am, like a good 10 to 12 hours into this game now, Jeez. And I've just had a wonderful time. Yeah, I did not expect this, and I was grinding on it. You start out with just yourself. You can do one action. You can gather wood. Each time you take that action, it takes a little bit of time to complete. Once you have three pieces of wood, you can build a bonfire. Once you do, the game tells you that your bonfire can be seen from miles away. Now, you can randomly attract new villagers to your settlement. As each new villager arrives, hoping to live in your settlement, you can give them a job. The only job you can give them at first, of course, is wood gatherer. But once you build a workshop, a bridge, some different buildings, you can give them different jobs that open up. Eventually, you can do stuff like build a tannery that turns hides from animals you killed into leather so you can make armor to arm your town guards to protect your town at night from the monsters. So already, if you're familiar with this type of game, this sounds a lot like the beginning of a lot of different games. So what is this game bringing to the table? Why did I crunch on it so hard? For one, a really nice, clean interface. Looks great. Works absolutely perfect for Switch. Great portable game, but great game to throw up on the big screen and chill on the couch with. I did both. Really nice immersive sound design, too. No complaints there. Second, a lot of the games this game is nodding to are text-based classic games that don't have the visuals that this game provides. And while simple, the graphics are really stylish. They really add a lot to the experience of the game. could I go back to the text-based sister game, to this, a dark room, after playing this? You know, I'm not sure that I could. This was really nice, and I didn't expect to care whether I had these features in this type of game. Third, this game may start in the same place as a lot of these games, but I would venture to argue it ends up in a very different place than a lot of them do. This game's got bosses, it's got dungeons, it's got shipyard, shipbuilding, trade with other unseen settlements across the water, lots of little fun stuff and big stuff that I don't want to spoil. But one thing I thought that I would want to say something smart-ass about in my review here, when I was starting this game out, you know, I noticed that as the manager of the settlement, you are also still that first playable character who collected the first three wood for the bonfire and an available member of the village. So that means you can collect one wood from the forest or one food from the farm, just like anybody else in town. So why wouldn't you? Well, at first, there's no reason not to. Go collect wood all day. We need that shit. Don't just stand there. Don't just stand there, me. But then I noticed something. You know, I could upgrade my townspeople, but not myself. I can build and then equip one of my villagers, like a cart to carry wood, for instance. Boom. Now they carry five wood instead of one. Amazing. But me, I can't have the cart. I don't even have the inventory slots for it. I can only ever carry one wood. I was like, what the hell is this? This is gone in the review. But then, over time, when I got closer to like 30 people in the village instead of five, and we already have wood on lockdown nowadays, like, instead of just gathering one resource at a time like a jabroni, I need to frantically check on all my townspeople all day and freak out and be like, oh no, is this guy too tired? He didn't sleep that last night very well. He's going to die tonight if I put him on guard duty. Or, oh shit, I got the really smart guy in the coal mines. I need to get his ass studying ancient texts so he can go become an alchemist one day. When I explore the dungeon in a very long dungeon crawler minigame that I didn't even know existed on my first playthrough because I didn't send out any scouts, so I didn't discover any caves. So, yeah, at that point, I was like, all right, I get why I don't have a fucking cart to push around town in case anybody needs my help carrying shit. I understand that, you know, why I'm not exactly incentivized to just pop over to the farm, start pushing around the grain mill for a while. I need to be available. I'm like the mayor or some shit. And sure enough, one time I was out in the iron mine, gathering some iron with the boys, when lo and behold, to our beloved town bonfire, arrived a traveling merchant. What was he selling? I'll never know because I was in the mine with the boys and everybody else is too busy for his bullshit too. I run a pretty tight ship around here. So he just got bored and left before I could make it out of the mines. So yeah, anybody shows up, you know, long story short, I don't go down to the iron mines anymore. I stand around the bonfire all day in case anybody shows up. And if anybody says anything to me about it, they don't know how hard I work around here every day, literally just making sure this place isn't burned to the ground. I don't care what anyone thinks anymore. I found myself thinking like this. And that is the main draw I would say this game has working in its favor compared to its peers. Really thoughtful design that helps you tell these little funny stories to yourself when you're running some sort of town in some game. The little interesting stuff that makes everything else make more sense later on. And it's always a rewarding experience for any player. It appreciates a well-made simulation game like that that is so thoughtful. But yeah, I had a great time with this. I want to give it a buy it, if you can't tell, but I realized suddenly I actually didn't look up how much this one costs. How much are we looking at
for this one? It is $7.99.
Oh my God, it's a buy it. Surprise, surprise. That's a deal. I thought this would be more like, on the Switch especially, like $15 for that $5 Switch up charge we're talking about. Like, this is a great deal. And I don't think this will be like the other games I make fun of myself for, where I'm like, I put 10 hours in the extension game, but most people would put two. Like, I think people who like this kind of game are easily going to get 10 to 12 hours out of it.
Nice.
I think it's a deal.
Sweet. All right. Well, that is it for you, Brooke. I know you wanted to get out of here earlier, but, you know, these people just talk so much.
You know, I had a good time. I laughed. I cried. You people.
We got that's my favorite thing in wrestling, is when someone turns heel and they're like, you people did this.
Oh my God. I'm really pumped about that fishing game. What is it called again that we're reviewing next week?
Oh, let me see. It is Call of the Wild, The Angler.
Oh man. So I just downloaded it today and I noticed one of the achievements is...
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it, so...
Oh, okay, I'll hold it then.
It is embargoed until the 30th, so...
Ooh, good call, still getting used to that. Okay, well, you're gonna love it. That's all I'm gonna say.
I wouldn't know because I don't have it. So do you have any final words before we let you go?
That's it, y'all. I'll see ya. See ya next week.
Bye, Brooke.
Night, night, y'all.
Next up is Flat Heroes, developed and published by Parallel Circles, released August 24th on Xbox and Windows 10 for $9.99. When was the last time you felt like a hero? Flat Heroes rewards you with that good old feeling of surviving impossible levels alongside a smooth, modern design with a minimalist style. With a simple set of movements and delightful controls, Flat Heroes encourages you to stylishly navigate and survive over 300 handcrafted levels, destroy the most epic bosses around, and truly be the two-dimensional hero you've always dreamed you could be. Purnell, are you a hero now?
There's certainly a 2D pixel block, so there's that.
you gotta so start Flat somewhere. Heroes,
oh yeah. So I'm not sure if I reviewed it for this show in the past or if I just bought it myself, but I already had Flat Heroes on the Switch, but with the idea of this being brought up for the Xbox, I wanted to take it on because I wanted to be able to rant about it to a live audience, or to a recorded audience, anyway. So,
hey, there's a couple people in our audience. We have a live audience.
Live audience. There we go. Because this game deserves all the love and attention it can possibly get. It is a ridiculously fun game. And you wouldn't think it just by looking at screenshots. Not to dismiss the game or anything, because I'm perfectly fine with minimalist stuff, too, but some people would be like, no dice, this doesn't look very appealing. They would be wrong. Because the idea behind this game is pretty simple. You are a square. That's it. You're a square. And you are tasked with survival. You don't get attacks or anything. You are literally just trying to survive stage after stage of obstacles designed to kill you. So there's the game is broken up into a series of worlds. When you take on a world, you basically have like a set of like let's say 10 stages or so, give or take. And when you choose to go into one, you will be tasked with a single room. And then things will start coming after you bit by bit. It might start simple, like for example, maybe some bullets will start appearing on the side of the screen and start firing across the screen. Your task is to dodge those, and your only abilities are a double jump and a dash. Also a wall grab. I should hold on to that. You can wall grab, which you will be doing also in a lot of. Sometimes you'll get hit with homing devices, exploding devices, snake lines, just a bunch of odd things that all want you dead. And your job is to survive them. Once you've survived enough for that level, the game level will end. You'll get a checkbox saying that you completed it, and you'll move on to the next stage. At the end of every world, there's a boss fight, which is kind of a weird thing to say because, again, you have no actual attacks. But what ends up happening is all the bosses are designed with a specific Achilles heel that they will trigger themselves so long as you can manipulate them into utilizing it. Like one enemy, just their sole job is to just smash into you. So your job is to make them smash into walls over and over again until they break their armor down. And I don't want to say the other ones because genuinely that's the fun of dealing with them is seeing what they want you to do and executing it and smiling about it. And the only thing, I mean, the main thing you unlock in the game is different palettes for your actual squares. But it doesn't matter because there's 300 freaking stages in the game. And you'll keep playing it as it gets harder and harder and harder because you're having fun. It's a very Twitch-style game. And when you die, the game throws you right back into the fray to try again. No downtime required. It's not a lot to say about the game, but it doesn't matter because it's that level of simple but fun gameplay that addicted me so much so that I was willing to take it on again, even with my limited free time, specifically because I wanted to talk about it again. It is a solid buy. Whatever world it's on, whatever console it's on, give this game your money because you will not regret it. It is Twitch-style gameplay at its finest.
Well, $10. Verdict?
Buy it. Buy the shit out of it.
Cool. I will. Looks really interesting, and it is on a launch sale for $7.99 on Xbox. So if it is still on sale, it says it ends in 8 days from now, so you got time. Next up is Mutropolis, developed by Parada Games, published by Ash Games, released August 18th on the Switch for $19.99. Mutropolis is a lovely sci-fi adventure set on the abandoned planet Earth. Plays Henry Dijon, hero, nerd, detective, in search of a legendary lost city, uncover weird ancient artifacts, and please don't get obliterated by an ageless evil. You've been warned. Chris, first off, Henry Dijon sounds like a name you would come up with.
That is true. Henry Dijon.
Second, tell us about this game.
Okay, so, Mootropolis is a point-and-click puzzle-adventure game starring the titular, not titular, but the Henry Dijon that we were just speaking of, who is a British guy. I don't know. I guess he's a nerd just by default. He does have glasses. So, yeah, this is a really interesting premise for a point-and-click. So, basically, something happened somewhere around our time, USA. No, like, planet Earth, really. A cataclysm happened where, basically, a lot of humanity had to flee the planet and go to Mars. And that's where, you know, they occupied Mars for 3,000 years. And the team that our Henry Dijon is on is an archaeological team that goes to Earth to basically see what they can find of this lost pre-cataclysmic society. So it's got, and you know, basically the story itself, like, you know, involves basically, you know, a member of the team disappearing and having to try and find him. And, you know, doing some investigative work. But actually, the first, I'm going to say, like, 30 minutes or so, like, the whole first, let's call it a map of the, you know, because point clicks always have, like, locations, essentially, that you walk around in and pixel hunt until you find the right items and combine them and talk to people and say the right things till, you know, you get to the goal. So the first setting is an archaeological dig where your character is looking for a trowel, which is a triangular shovel, if people are not super familiar with, you know, tools. But, you know, he's made fun of for it, of course, because a trowel is such an ancient and obsolete piece of gear. But, of course, it remains your constant companion in the game, and, you know, you solve puzzles with it and stuff, too, so it's kind of cool. But, like, it's kind of neat because it starts off so low stakes. It's like you're basically talking to your friends, trying to discover who hid your trowel or who, you know, has it or what did they do with it, while you walk around and, you know, talk to people and kind of get the lay of the land. But then, yeah, like I said, they discover an ancient city called Mootropolis, and which is a city of legend that, you know. And, you know, that's kind of how, like, the game treats, like, that is essentially the core of the game's humor, right? Is that because civilization sort of reset itself right around our time, the game makes many references to you know, in an almost a very awe filled like sense, you know, very reverent. They look upon 21st century Earth very reverently. And lots of things have, like, kind of crossed into legend. And, of course, they misunderstand a lot of things. Like, there's a book that you have where you can read through and, like, look at different household appliances and, like, basically see these folks' best guess at what this stuff used to be like. Which is funny because, you know, that's kind of how we are with when we have ancient stuff, is, like, we just kind of guess, oh, this was used for this, clearly. And, you know, they'll make references to, like, certain celebrities, you know, as if they didn't exist. It's funny, there was a Doctor Who episode that was a lot like this. There's a character that was an Earthologist who, you know, despite not being from Earth, claimed to be an expert on Earth, and just everything he was saying about Earth was completely wrong, but, like, somewhat resembling, you know, clearly somebody who misunderstood, like, the planet talking about it. And it's, I don't know, it's a funny humor device. If you get sick of that pretty quickly, though, this might not be the game for you, because they do it a lot. However, like I said, the voice acting and the general writing of this game is really nice. I really liked all of the dialogue. I did not at any point want to turn off any of the voice acting. All of the characters are good. And yeah, as far as, like, the actual point and click goes, so this is pretty standard fare. Like I said, you basically hunt for things that are around. Your character talks about them. You either pick them up, put them in your backpack, and use them later, combine them at some points. You talk to people and get the right dialogue trees to, you know, score the the correct dialogue option for the next character, all, you know, kind of going towards an ultimate goal of, like, basically moving on to the next set piece. What I like about this game, so this is adapted from a computer games, which had a, you know, the point and click interface, which, you know, that typically requires a mouse, which we don't have. But they do a good job of translating this into the Switch. Like most good point and clicks, you can move a cursor around with the left stick, or with the right stick, you can move it very slowly so that you can really hone in on, like, certain things. If you hold down the X button, then all of the hotspots of the scenery will appear so that you don't have to pixel hunt. I always like it when they remove the pixel hunting aspect.
Speaking of pixel hunting, is there touch screen to tap the pixels?
Yes. Okay, yes, cool. There is. Yeah, and in fact,
it blows my mind when Switch point and clicks don't have touch screen.
I know, me too. I always make a point of pointing out when they don't, but this one does. So that's good. The art style is really nice. Everybody kind of looks, everybody's cartoony, very thin, like it's very like stick figure-y almost, but like they do resemble people.
I know you said stick figure-y, but I swear to God you said dick figure-y.
It could be that too, yeah. I don't know what that means, but sure, let's start a rumor. Backgrounds are really nice. They kind of got a pencil look to them, which is kind of cool. You know, animation is good. No, your mouths don't move or anything like that, or if they do, it's like it's minimal. Most of the characters' eyes are like kind of dot eyes as well, or hidden. That's no problem. It's stylized. It looks good. At certain points, the game will actually change the entire graphical style as a joke that I don't want to spoil, so I won't. But yeah, great attention was paid to like the look of this game. Sound of this game, like I said, it's all about the you know, British people talking, and, you know, well, I guess the main character's British and some of the other characters, but actually it's kind of a diverse mix. But yeah, it's all about hearing the characters talk, so it kind of doesn't matter what the music's like, which is fine because I don't even recall. And the puzzles, like, I'm gonna call them, let's call them mid-tier on difficulty. It's nothing too insane, but it's also not like you're just sitting here, you know,
bored.
Yeah, you're not just going through dialogue and then, oh, I got to use this one item now that I found it. So, you know, you actually do have to put on your thinking cap for this one, but you don't have to be like a genius of British point-and-clickology, which like you would on the like more classic games. I haven't actually run into any death events. They mentioned that you can die, I guess, but it didn't happen for me. So, but I didn't play all the way through this one, so I'm not sure about that. It really does seem to be more in the kind of LucasArts style. Not LucasArts, but maybe. No, it's like your classic, like a British point and click, you know? It's like Discworld, basically. That's the one I've beaten, so like that's the one I can best compare it to. Overall, I like it. It doesn't do anything too special, but everything that it does with gusto. Nice. And I like that.
One of the features is tons of love, and it sounds like they put a lot of work and care into this one. So $20, yeah. What are your thoughts?
$20, I'd say they've earned that bill. That's a, you know, $20 is usually your kind of top end for point and clicks, unless they're just real special and they ask for the full 50. Yeah, especially the ones of the physical release. But yeah, as far as like a digital only type of affair, this is definitely worth that much. So I'm going to go ahead and give this one a buy it. At least check it out, because it's pretty cool. And it's been available on other systems for a while now, too. So it doesn't have to be on Switch. But again, I do like that Switch gives you that touchscreen and, you know, that portability as well.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Inglet, developed by Niflis, published by Triple Topping, released August 11th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $4.99. Swim, launch, jump, and bounce between bubbles that float through the sky in this meditative floating platformer. A reactive soundscape creates the soundtrack to your exploration through the playful puzzles of Inglet's hand-drawn levels. Pernell, what is going on in Inglet?
I have no idea, but what I can tell you is that this game is by far my surprise game of the week. This game is really good. It's actually a lot of fun, and it's got this vibe to it that kind of draws you in and keeps you. It's like a nice, you know, that feeling you get when you just kind of want to zone out and just putz around in a game, and the audio kind of supports that, and you just kind of lose track of time, just flooping and flooping. So the way the game flows, though, is that you're, I guess, an amoeba, a parasite. I don't know. You're a floating thing. You're watching TV in your family bubble with other floating things when a meteor hits and smashes everything to crap. And next thing you know, you're floating atop a map that looks like a city, and you are tasked with locating environments to trek into as stages and complete them. You'll float around this little hovering map, and you can press the A button to kind of send out like a bit of a sonar, and that helps you find where the next stage is. And once you find it, you go in, and the game immediately picks up and becomes awesome at this point. The way it works is you're floating around. Like Joe mentioned, there are bubbles that will exist within the stages. As long as you're inside of a bubble, you will float there. If you are outside of a bubble, you will fall. It's almost like you're, I guess, like bubbles along a, like along a 2D plane, like a wall or something. Because if you're not in a bubble, you will descend. And if you fall, you die, more or less. But the game is very generous with how respawns work, which is important. Because this game will have you breaking your balls to pull moves off. Each bubble, not every bubble, though early on is pretty much every bubble. Most of the bubbles in the game, if you just sit still inside of the bubble, a pink line will get traced around it. And if you allow that to happen, that bubble becomes your new checkpoint. No muss, no fuss. There's no penalty for utilizing the checkpoint. If you want to be bold enough, you can make every bubble you come across that's legal a checkpoint. Go for it. I couldn't do it, though, because I like the idea of floating and running, and that momentum felt good. As you're moving around, you can do... There's not a lot of things that you, as an actual bubble thing, can do. You can swim, and you can dash. That's it. However, you are meant to interact with a lot of things on the stage, and depending on the level, different things will occur. I mean, I'm not going to spoil a ton, but I can tell you, for example, the thing I like the most are there certain platforms that have like a rebound or bounce function, but they only work if you are, sometimes they only work if you are dashing into them, and other times they'll work when you only when you don't dash into them. It will mess with your head sometimes. You're like, okay, I gotta dash in, but I can't dash just yet. I gotta wait, gotta get it now. Boom, and you get it. Other times you might be like, okay, dash into this. And, well, I guess this line won't make sense until I explain this next bit, which is basically that you can only dash one time in the air unless you're inside of a bubble. When you're in a bubble, it recharges your dash. But the objects I just described, if you utilize them by bumping into them, that will also recharge your dash. So one cool thing you end up doing sometimes is being like, okay, I'm going to dash into this thing and then immediately dash into it again because, oh, sorry, bounce into it and then immediately dash through it. That way, I can, you know, get past this spring station because I actually want to see what's behind it. You'll make a lot of weird decisions like that. You will die and fail a lot, and you'll get respawning in little bubbles again and again and again. And I'll feel like no time was lost. There's a lot of cool stage gimmicks to utilize, so you'll have fun messing with that stuff as you see your way through the level, where the overall goal in the level is to find... I don't even know what the hell they are. Maybe they're like amoeba family members, but you find one, which then allows you to make haste in one of like three or so ways I've come across to get to the stage's exit and leave the level. And it's actually really fun how those works too, because my favorite one is one where you eventually reach it and it kind of sort of gives you like They Live type glasses where you can see the hidden objects on the stage, including hidden rails and hidden bubbles and such. And it ultimately ends up taking you back to the beginning of the stage where the exit ramp is to actually leave the level. It's a lot of fun to mess with that. There's also collectibles on the stages. I don't know what they do per se, but I got every last damn one of them. It's just like these like sort of smooth triangular pieces. Sometimes I have to collect like a bunch of them in the air before going into a bubble to make it spawn. Other times they're just kind of there and you got to reach them and grab them. It's worth getting just to see the nice checkbox at the end of the level that says, hey, you did it. Also just because the game's a lot of fun. It becomes fun to sit there and see, okay, how do I get this? How do I pull this maneuver? Crap, I die. I'll try again. Crap, I die. I'll try again. And you just keep going. Again, because the respawn is very generous. There's no, unless you're really bad at determining when to make checkpoints, you'll pretty much lose no time between deaths getting back to business.
Nice. Well, the game is sitting at $4.99. What are your thoughts?
This is a definite buy. This is not a fuck it, why not? This is worth your money and time, even with the occasional frustration of, like, crap, I can't move further over. I'm done to the control. I'm a little slippy. Like, it doesn't even matter. The game is a ton of fun, and I enjoy playing it, and I enjoy zoning out to it. Worth your money.
Sounds good. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one just in time for Jacob to show up in chat.
bye, Jacob.
My beard looks illustrious tonight. My beard looks fantastic.
Getting off the big words.
Music this episode. We were talking about Hell with Curse to Golf. So how about some Doom from Maze Dude and Aleshon? The End of Hell.
Good old Aleshon.
You guys down with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I don't know. I feel like Hell, golfing in Hell would be... You don't even need power-ups to make that a nightmare.
I'll go with a no on that. Okay, the end.
Fuck you! There's the final words.